Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Had Jimi Hendrix lived past his untimely death in 1970, he would have turned 70 in November. The world can only guess at all of the music and experimental performances we've missed out on over the past four decades. But interest in Hendrix has never been higher. The late innovator has his second new album in 3 years coming out in March, entitled People, Hell, and Angels. Music fans have shown that if producers can uncover lost Hendrix recordings, we will be glad to hear them. But if you need a Hendrix fix between the intermittent release of lost tapes, the new coffee table book, The Ultimate Lyric Book, should do the trick. Compiled by Hendrix's sister, Janie Hendrix, CEO of Experience Hendrix LLC, the book features Hendrix's handwritten lyrics and photos of the guitarist at work, at play, and at home. The Ultimate Lyric Book is published by Backbeat Books, and it's a pleasure to welcome Janie Hendrix to the roundtable. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ian.
I have to imagine that this is somewhat of a bittersweet project for you.
Well, in some ways, yes, because, you know, he's not here to see the fruits of our labor, but after all, they are the fruits of his labor that come out. And it's his handwriting, it's his drawings, it's really a part of his soul that he's left behind for all of us to enjoy, learn, and reread over and over and over.
You know, there's always a public version of a famous person that we as fans get to know, but what are your memories of your brother?
You know, overall, I mean, I have a lot of experiences and a lot of memories and fun and laughter, I think, but, you know, when I think of Jimmy, and I love to see pictures of him smiling, because that's really how I remember him, sitting at the table, laughing, smiling, talking, telling stories, being very intently listening to family members tell stories of what's going on, because he always kind of felt like he was missing out. Seeing him laugh when he's playing Monopoly, he's liked to be the little shoe and go around the Monopoly table and buy all the kind of what he would call Skid Row properties and put motels on there and watch everybody lose to him, because you know, everybody wants to buy the Boardwalk and Park Place, but he'd want to buy Mediterranean and Baltic and put tons of hotels on, and just having fun, you know, and being himself as far as talking about people that he met. He didn't really talk too much about, you know, being on stage or anything like that. He wasn't pretentious. He was one of the most humble and sweet and sincere people that you could ever meet and know.
He was quite a bit older than you, wasn't he?
We're 18 years apart. So he's really more like a dad, right?
So what was as he rose in fame and stature, you were just a little kid. I mean, did you have the full scope of what he was going through?
Well, no, I don't think anybody had the full scope of what he was going through, and maybe sometimes he didn't really even have the full scope of what he was going through. I don't think that he really understood how his music, 40-some years later, would still be here for people to try to learn from, try to be guided by. Absolutely not. You know, from 6 to 9 years old, you're just kind of learning about the world yourself, and then to understand what it was like for Jimmy, where he was traveling the world and on stage every night and, you know, in front of thousands of people and maybe even, you know, close to a million people in some cases. But I don't know, for us, it was just when he'd come home, he was Jimmy, and he wasn't necessarily the rock star that everyone else saw and knew him as.
I hope you don't mind me asking, but I want to just kind of touch on how you found out that he had in fact died.
Well, I was, it's a day that I'll never forget. I was 9 years old. I was in fourth grade. And at that time there was, in school we had show and tell. And my parents received the call that Jimmy had passed, but I had already gone to school and they figured that I wouldn't find out at school and they could deal with all the loose ends and grief and contacting people without, you know, me there. And they knew that I would take it hard, but they just figured I wouldn't find out. And when I got to school, there were some people that lived closer to the school than I did, so they were able to watch the news. And one kid stood up, and as he was saying his show and tell, which was Jimi Hendrix died today, And as he's saying it, the teacher told him to sit down because she knew that I didn't know. I don't know if my parents called ahead or what. But then the whole day kind of went on, and it was elementary school that consisted of K through 6. And a girl came up to me and she said, "Janie, I'm really sorry." And I said, "What did you do?" And she goes, "No, your brother died." And I really didn't believe it. We had had a prank call about a month before that somebody said that Jimmy had died, and my parents panicked and they called and tracked him down, and he said he was fine. So I really didn't believe it. And I remember the long walk home. It just happened to be a friend of mine's birthday, and I was invited to her birthday party. And I said, kind of in the back of my mind, I thought, you know, what if this is true? Of course, life will change. And I remember walking up the street and the corner, I was like going slower and slower because I thought, when I turn that corner, if I see cars in front of our house, I'll know it's true. But if I don't, then it's not true. I just remember going slower and slower and slower, just dreading turning that corner. And the street was packed with cars. And then I remember thinking, I don't believe it. I'm not going to believe it. And I remember walking in the house, and I said to my mom, I want to go to Ann's birthday party. And my dad just came out of nowhere, and he swooped me up like a superhero and took me to the room, and we just cried. And he just said, life will never be the same.
Wow. I'm sure it took a while for this to happen, but for you as well. I mean, here we are all these years later, and you're carrying the flag for your brother still. So this changed everything for you too, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I was 6, Jimmy had first come back home from being both in the Army and trying to make the Chitlin Circuit and trying to, you know, make it as the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And he had said, you know, "Janie, as you grow up, you're never going to have to worry about anything. I'll always take care of you." And I said, "Well, when I grow up, I'll always take care of you." And we made a cosmic promise. And, you know, there is a picture of that where we are, that's what we're talking about. And in essence, we did not only promise to take care of each other, but we do continue to take care of each other.
As you were putting this book together and going through his past lyrics, did you learn anything new about your brother that you didn't know?
Well, I got to read some unpublished lyrics that I hadn't read before, and that was really, really interesting to me because it just kind of showed kind of how he was putting together songs. And anytime I read his lyrics, it doesn't matter how many times I read them, I always find something new, something interesting, something that catches my eye. As we evolve in our life, I think that, you know, we become different people in some ways. Definitely more rounded and more grounded. And I never stop learning from his lyrics. I think that they've definitely guided me and been a soundtrack to my life. So reading the lyrics and understanding that this is part of him, this is part of his soul, that this is who he is, this is who he was, it's his beliefs, his dreams, his visions, and it's all written for us to continue to read through our lifetime.
You know, when people talk about Jimi Hendrix or picture him, they always say, you know, guitar god, guitar innovator. He lit his guitar on fire. He played with his teeth. We all talk about guitar. Do you think he is underrated as a lyricist and a songwriter?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that he's underrated as a person. He's an amazing musician aside from playing guitar and his voice, though my dad told Jimmy pretty much all of his life that he couldn't sing. Jimmy figured, well, I'm just going to go out and holler like the rest of them. And I think that his voice in his kind of blues-like way was able to be very harmonious to his guitar playing. His lyrics are very prophetic, and his words really do transcend through time and generations, and it's kind of left as a guide for us. He's a very old soul and a very wise person to have only lived 27 years, to have a career as a songwriter and a lyricist and a musician and an entertainer that only encompasses, you know, just a few years really, is amazing, an amazing legacy to leave behind.
I was really struck. I think it was the handwritten lyrics for the song War Child. You think of Hendrix as sort of a jazz musician in a way, in that he would experiment and you never knew where the song was going. But here he is writing chord progressions along with the lyrics in a very traditional way that he's not always given credit for.
Well, I think that really for Jimmy, he delves into so many different genres of music that people don't realize that, you know, he had a great sense of humor. And, you know, when he talks about Dolly Mae and Click Bang What a Hang, Your Daddy Just Shot For Me, you have blues, you have intricate guitar playing in Machine Gun, you have Red House Over Yonder, which is basically a traditional blues type song, and then you have ballads like Little Wing and Angel. And so the music that goes with the words, of course, changes everything. I agree with you. I think that he really was pulling from a whole nother source, perhaps a whole nother universe, when he was writing his music.
Speaking of, I mentioned in the lead that there's a new CD coming out in March. Do you have an idea of how much unheard Hendrix remains?
Well, we recently, not too long ago, signed a contract with Sony, and it was for an 8-year deal, and that's putting out a new album every year, as well as a documentary about every 18 months. So that's kind of gives you an idea of what's left. We have about 4 more years on the Sony contract, so we have at least 4 more years. The interesting thing is, besides all the music that's in our vault, and it is full to the rafters, and there's shelves in the middle of this probably 30 by 30 room with about 12-foot ceilings. The music that is in there has definitely sustained us this long and will continue for at least 4 more years. And if we're always looking, constantly have our ear to the ground to collect more tapes if they're out there. And there are a couple shows that we don't have, and we're hoping to find them.
I mean, as you say, he was 27. How is there that much productivity? It's just unbelievable.
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, it starts with my father. He was a workaholic. My dad was a gardener. He worked 14-hour days and still had time to be a parent and being an involved parent. And Jimmy, you know, being under that tutelage, learned that. He was a workaholic, and he had his own studio. He had Electric Lady. He was able to go in and work without somebody saying, okay, you know, you got to get out of the studio. We have another group coming in, because it was his. And then he had 4-track tapes that he took home, and he was able to work in his apartment or on the road. And he was constantly, and he used to tell me, you know, Janie, leave a notebook on the side of your bed with a pen, because you'll dream dreams and you won't remember them when you wake up. But if you wake up in the middle of the night, write them down, because they could be a song, they could be a story. And he lived that. That's what he did.
Janie Hendrix is the compiler of a new collection of Jimi Hendrix's handwritten lyrics, The Ultimate Lyric Book, which is published by Backbeat Books. She's the president and CEO of Experience Hendrix LLC and the real keeper of the flame for Jimi Hendrix. Janie, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you, Ian, and thank you for helping to keep the legacy alive with your radio show. Thank you very much.
She stayed with me just long enough to rescue me, and she told me a story yesterday about the sweet love between the moon and the deep blue sea. And then she spread her wings high over me. She said she's gonna come back tomorrow. And I said, fly on, my sweet angel. Fly on through outside.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.